You're listening to the RBN Energy Blogcast. This is an audio version of RBN's Daily Energy Blog, which is a fun and insightful daily commentary on oil, gas, NGL, and refined product markets. Each morning, we cover commodity fundamentals and industry changes to keep you informed of developing trends across the U.S. energy landscape.
Thursday, June 25th, 2026. Runaway, what's behind the soaring price of the D4 Renewable Identification Number? Published by George Hoekstra. The price of the D4 Renewable Identification Number, RIN, has increased by 130% so far in 2026. The jump in the price of this RIN, a federal environmental credit that functions as a subsidy for the production of diesel made from soybean oil and other renewable feedstocks, but also as a tax on the production of conventional diesel made from crude oil, has been accompanied by a 60% increase in the price of soybean oil. Today's RBN blog gives a high-level view of what is behind this year's bull run in the D4 RIN and related commodities. In 2026 and 27, U.S. refiners and importers are obligated to supply nearly 6 billion gallons per year of diesel made from feedstocks like soybean oil to the U.S. market. That's 10% of all diesel to be consumed in the U.S. This obligation stems from the Renewable Fuel Standard, RFS, which we've written about for years, going all the way back to 2012's A Market of Contradictions. The RFS is administered by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, and includes mandates for minimum annual production volumes of four different categories of renewable fuels: cellulosic biofuel, bio-based diesel, advanced biofuel, and total renewable fuel. Through the credit trading system created with the RFS, refiners who don't have the capability to produce diesel from renewable feedstocks can effectively borrow that capability from others who do. You can do that by buying D4 RINs, reporting that transaction to the government, then retiring the RINs. By paying for and retiring those RINs, you have effectively rented the capacity to produce your government-mandated quota of renewable diesel, while some other biofuel producer has fulfilled your obligation to supply it to the U.S. market. Many refiners produce renewable diesel, the common name for the product made in petroleum refineries, at facilities modified to convert soybean oil into diesel. They include Calumet Incorporated, Chevron, Holly Frontier, Marathon Petroleum, Par Pacific Holdings, PBF Energy, Phillips 66, and Valero. In addition to the petroleum refineries noted above, many small biorefineries make bio-based diesel from soybean oil and other qualifying feedstocks. This second category of producers uses a chemical process to create a different type of diesel, also an effective substitute for petroleum diesel, commonly called biodiesel. The term bio-based diesel is used to describe the broad category that includes renewable diesel and biodiesel. See our Baby the RINs Must Fall series for details on the two processes and the fuels they produce. Who are the small biodiesel producers? In 2022, Chevron bought Renewable Energy Group, who is the largest biodiesel producer, to form what is now called Chevron Renewable Energy Group. Ag Processing Incorporated is another name in the biodiesel producer category, along with soybean oil producers Archer Daniels Midland, Bunge Global, Cargill, and Louis Dreyfus, who have expanded their soybean crushing operations into the production of diesel from soybean oil. These companies can produce biodiesel profitably only because doing so earns them RINs that act as a subsidy via their market value. After selling the RINs and cashing in any other available subsidies, bio-based diesel product, sold as diesel, produces enough revenue to exceed the higher cost of making biodiesel versus petroleum diesel. So, we have demand for D4 RINs from petroleum refiners, with supply coming from biodiesel and renewable diesel producers. The demand for RINs is set by government mandate, while the supply of RINs is determined by decisions made by the bio-based diesel producers who compete to capture the subsidies provided by the RIN. The D4 RIN price, which has risen sharply this year, is determined by supply and demand. The D4 RIN price has also moved substantially above the soybean oil ULSD differential, a spread used to evaluate the profitability of producing biodiesel. Note that 1.5 RINs are generated for each gallon of biodiesel produced. The common practice is to convert the D4 RIN price into a per-gallon biodiesel value by multiplying it by 1.5, before comparing it with feedstock spreads. The higher-priced RIN is essential because it costs 2-3x more to produce biodiesel or renewable diesel from soybean oil, mainly because the soybean oil itself costs that much more than ULSD, even before you've refined the soybean oil to make it a suitable substitute for regular diesel. See our Upside Down blog series for more on renewable diesel. So, what's behind this year's 130% run-up in the D4 RIN price? Undoubtedly, the biggest factor is the increased bio-based diesel volume mandate set by the EPA for 2026 and 27. That mandate was increased to 6 billion gallons per year, up 70% from 2025. The EPA proposed the increase in June 2025 and the final rules came out in March. In between, there was a 9-month process of stakeholder feedback, lobbying and negotiations among a host of participants from the oil and agriculture industries who have strong interests in the mandate because it sets the demand level for their products. Three issues became major bargaining chips during the 9-month negotiation. The first involves small refiner exemptions, SREs, which have fueled a 13-year legal dispute, see our Misunderstanding blog series. This latest episode in the SRE battle led to a compromise that grants some of the disputed exemptions while denying others. Refineries with annual production of less than 75,000 barrels per day are potentially eligible for an SRE. The granting of some exemptions effectively reduces the demand for RINs, which, as of now, is mostly offset by assigning 70% of the exempted obligations to others to be fulfilled in 2026 and later years. This compromise is the latest, but not necessarily the last, episode in this legal saga. The AFPM has challenged the EPA's broader Set 2 rule, which sets 2026 and 27 RVOs and includes provisions around SREs, in the D.C. Circuit, arguing the rule is excessively costly and unlawful. The SRE reallocation is one of the core refiner objections because it shifts waived small refinery obligations onto the rest of the obligated party pool. As of now, the case appears to be in the early petition for review stage. AFPM has filed related Set 2 challenges that are also pending, but there is no reported merits ruling, stay, or vacatur of the 70% reallocation yet. The second big issue was a proposal to reduce the number of RINs earned by imported biofuel gallons to 1/2 those earned by domestically produced gallons. The RFS mandates and RIN rules also apply to imported and exported gallons. This half-RIN proposal would directly tilt the playing field in favor of domestic versus international suppliers and would especially benefit the U.S. agriculture industry. The half-RIN proposal was not adopted for 2026 and 27, but in the final rule, the EPA said it intends to pursue it in the next round of mandate setting, for implementation in 2028 and beyond. Further delays or cancellation of this proposal remain possible. If it is adopted, it is highly likely to be challenged in court. The third big issue is a producer tax credit called 45Z, a Biden-era provision from the Inflation Reduction Act, IRA, and amended by the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, ABA, that provides a higher federal subsidy for production of biofuels made from feedstocks with lower carbon intensity, meaning feedstocks that produce less carbon dioxide, CO2, when burned as fuel. This issue is still not completely resolved. Meanwhile, the industry is proceeding with business while coping with the uncertainties that still surround this tax credit. After 9 months of deliberations, the final rules around the RFS mandates were released on March 27. When the dust settled, the biggest uncertainties had been clarified, but the final mandate was not much different from informed projections made after the proposal was issued 9 months earlier, which said a huge increase in the mandated demand for bio-based diesel was on the way. With the mandates now set for 2026 and 27, the big questions are whether, when, and how the industry will respond with the higher bio-based diesel supply rates needed to reach the mandate. This year's 130% increase in the D4 RIN price is a big incentive for more supply. In addition, the 60% increase in soybean oil and other bio-feedstock prices is a strong indicator that more domestic production is on the way. Renewable diesel producers have reported their production rates are increasing to near nameplate capacity and, in some cases, going well beyond that. Some shuttered biodiesel plants have resumed production. But domestic production is not the only factor in the RIN supply/demand balance. Other factors include imports, exports, and the relative costs of different bio-based diesel feedstocks, which include canola oil, distillers' corn oil, from ethanol plants, animal fats, like beef tallow and poultry fats, and waste oils, like used cooking oil. Higher RIN prices encourage increased supply from all these feedstock sources, each with its own supply chain. Perhaps the biggest unknown is how the current large incentives will trigger unexpected innovations, which can happen anywhere along the diverse supply chain. Market sentiment indicates an even higher RIN price will be needed to meet the annual 6 billion gallon target. Among market watchers who meticulously track supply and demand of renewable fuels, feedstocks, and RINs, there is now talk of a possible D4 RIN price runaway that might force the EPA to find a way to back away from the high mandate level. Critical industry-level supply data are published monthly by the U.S. Energy Information Administration, EIA, and the EPA, but with so many moving parts, it is a big challenge to even keep a reasonably up-to-date industry supply-demand balance, let alone foresee what will happen by the day of reckoning. Finally, we note that these RIN costs are generally passed on to consumers, although there is some debate about how much someone has to pay for these subsidies. We estimate RIN costs are currently adding more than 13 cents per gallon to the pump price of E10 gasoline and around 37 cents per gallon to the pump price of diesel. This is up from around 4 cents per gallon and 15 cents per gallon for gasoline and diesel respectively in June 2025. Today's blog has focused on the physical markets that determine the supply and demand of D4 RINs. The D4 RIN itself is a financial asset which, like other environmental credits, is traded in a financial market. But unlike other traded environmental credits, the D4 RIN is just one of a family of four RINs. There is one for each of the four categories of RFS renewable fuels that is nested in a way that causes the family members to interact with one another in ways that can surprise the market. Furthermore, each comes in different vintages with different expiration dates, and any of them can be banked and borrowed. These nuances make the RIN the most complex environmental credit ever invented. In the next blog in this series, we will show how these complexities have already affected this year's RIN price rise, and how they might further influence where it heads from here. Runaway was written by Del Shannon and Max Crook, and appears as the sixth song on side one of Shannon's 1961 debut studio album, Runaway with Del Shannon. Singer/guitarist Charles Westover and his keyboardist, Max Crook, were playing together in a band featured at the Hi-Lo Club in Battle Creek, Michigan, called Charlie Johnson and the Big Little Show Band. Ann Arbor DJ Ollie McLaughlin helped them secure a record deal with Big Top Records in New York in 1960. Westover changed his name to Del Shannon, and Crook, who had invented a new electronic keyboard he called a Musitron, changed his name to Maximilian Crook. The recording of Runaway took place at Bell Sound in New York City in January 1961 and features Crook soloing on his Musitron keyboard. Released as a single in February 1961, it went to number one on the Billboard Hot 100 Singles chart and has been certified gold by the Recording Industry Association of America. Personnel on the recording were Del Shannon, vocals, Max Crook, Musitron solo, Mo Wexler, piano, Al Caiola, Al Casamenti, Bucky Pizzarelli, guitars, Milt Hinton bass, Joe Marshall, drums, and Bill Ramall, baritone sax. Producer Harry Balk sped up the recording a half step before it was pressed to vinyl. As a side note, Crook's Musitron was also used on Shannon's Hats Off to Larry and So Long Baby. It remained in Crook's possession until he died in Deming, New Mexico, in July 2020 at 83. The Musitron remains with Crook's family. The album, Runaway with Del Shannon, was recorded in January 1961 at Bell Sound in New York City and was produced by Harry Balk. Released on Big Top Records in June 1961, it went to number 32 on the Billboard 200 Albums chart. The album features the first recording of the Doc Pomus and Mort Schumann song, Marie's the Name, Latest Flame, made popular by Elvis Presley. One single, the number one hit Runaway, was released from the LP. Del Shannon, Charles Wheaton Westover, was an American singer, songwriter, and musician best known for his signature song and number one hit single, Runaway. He released 15 studio albums, 2 live albums, 5 compilation albums, and 39 singles. He later worked with Dave Edmunds, and Tom Petty produced his 1982 studio album, Drop Down and Get Me. Shannon died at his home in Santa Clarita, California, in February 1990 at 55. He was posthumously inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1999.
Thanks for listening to the RBN Daily Energy Blogcast. For more information on energy market reports, maps, and consulting engagements, please visit us at rbnenergy.com. And thanks for rocking with us.